This morning, we've got Don and Crystal Nance as our guests. Now, Don Nance has got a major reputation in Ormiston. So many people have tried his product and given raves about Don's product. And somehow, Crystal, Don's daughter, got caught up in the Ormus world as well. And her specialty is making Ormus oil. And so I find this an area quite fascinating because it's a vastly different procedure to create Ormus oils than it is to use sodium hydroxide, because if you use sodium hydroxide with oils and fat, you create soap, which is okay if you want to wash your mouth out, but not if you want to create an Ormus. So it's a vastly different procedure, which we're going to pick Crystal and Don's brain about. So Crystal and Don, are you on?
I'm here.
I'm here.
Fantastic. Hello. Welcome to the call. And so, Crystal.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how... Welcome to the call, Stevie, darling. Do tell us a little bit about how you got involved with Don. In terms of do tell us how you got involved with Don in his Ormus explorations.
Okay. Well, first, Daddy's going to say a few things first, and then I got a whole thing.
Yeah, sure. Welcome, Don.
Howdy, folks. Welcome to the call. Barry Carter, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, Barry. Crystal and I wanted to donate myself a free bottle of the Doves of Venus made from the copper.
Oh, cool.
And Crystal wants to donate a bottle of Infinity Oil made from copper.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could auction or raffle that off, and the proceeds will go to you.
Oh, cool.
And just let me know who to ship it to. Think you can handle that?
Yep.
Cool.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you.
Except, if it's auctioned off in a free raffle, there won't be any proceeds.
Well, if there aren't any raffle proceeds, then we'll just hold someone hostage. Anyway.
Well, how about a bottle of Ormus to their head?
Basically this whole thing is more to help to subsidize Barry more than anything else, as well as elucidate ideas. So I'd like to try to propagate that when possible.
Very good.
Okay. Well, most of you are familiar with me. You notice that I don't post to the forums that much. Usually when I do, you see that I'm kind of a nuts and bolts kind of guy. I talk about the processes and about the research. But one thing I'd like to talk about, I see a lot of people having problems doing the simpler processes, like the wet method. New alchemists or wannabe alchemists, the two largest mistakes they make, first of all, is impatience. They want to rush right in and do processes before they've actually thoroughly read and understood the documentation about it. And then they try to go too fast, and they don't allow time for the reactions to take place. And the next largest mistake they make is that they don't enlist their higher self, God, or whatever paradigm that you use for that. Let me give you an example. Alchemy has worked on three planes. The highest being the highest consciousness. If you have three people doing the same process, say they're making Dead Sea manna from Dead Sea salt, of the three individuals, the first one will be afraid of overshooting the pH. They're putting fear into the mix, and that is really an error. It changes the result to a negative one. A second person of the three will focus on the arm or shoulder aching from stirring so much. That's going to put pain into the mix. Well, the third person of the three will have enlisted their higher self or God, and the manna will be filled with love instead of pain or fear. With no fear of overshooting the pH because of guidance from above, they'll know when to stop, whether they're at their target pH or not. The shoulder won't be a problem because they've risen above average consciousness and are more detached from their physicality. Who is making the manna makes a tremendous difference in the result that you're going to get from it. So if you think about those things for a while, it'll make sense. Crystal and I both share the same philosophy, which basically is alchemy. And she'll talk more about that later. Normally I stay more involved with processes, and I'm less likely to shift gears about those things. And I am shifting gears now and talk some about the research. Some of the assays that I had sent out previously, the results came back and were totally unusable. I finally decided that the reason was because I had sent the tortured and forced back to metal samples with those other samples. And I could find no other explanation for it. The results were just totally unusable. But the results that were usable, and what were most important about them, is that the materials kept changing. It went from 0.04 ounces per ton of silver to 279 ounces per ton of silver, and from 0.04 ounces per ton of gold to 1.4 ounces per ton of gold, and nothing whatsoever was done with the material in the interim.
So how'd that happen, Don?
The material doesn't fall directly to the target element. It goes through transitions where the arms are combining, recombining, protonating, then combining and recombining, and it's all due to low-level residual radiation. And that's my opinion at this time. I'm going to go a little bit more into that. I don't want to stay stuck in one paradigm because there are too many holes in all of them for me to be comfortable with them. But one thing I can do regarding those assays is I'm going to go ahead and get direct fire assays of the sea salts themselves. Good. So if you compare direct fire assays of the sea salt with direct fire assays of the reduced manna, then you should be able to look conclusively that something is going on that wasn't in the original salt.
That extra ingredient comes from, Don?
Well, it comes from the aether, or it's transdimensional.
Comes from the what?
There again, you know, it depends upon what paradigm you're embracing. I'll get more into that.
Don, you're kind of getting ahead of me. Aether or ether word, it just comes out of effectively nowhere.
Yeah, well, nowhere is where everything else came from and where everything that will be is. So, you know, look, you know, alchemists see no distinction between art, science, and religion. However, modern man even teaches sciences as separate disciplines. Physics is a separate discipline from chemistry. You know, the largest problem with actually being able to work better and understand better this material is to build a bridge. But that bridge has to be built between matter and light. You know, we need to have the physicists actually talking to the chemists and the chemists actually working with the physicists. Because what's happening is right now the paradigms break down at Planck's constant. Mathematics, in its pure form, and in nature, to describe nature, you shouldn't need a fudge factor. You shouldn't have to lie to be able to balance the checkbook. So there's obviously something missing in the current paradigms that we're using. Now, if you read Ledbetter and Besant, Louis Curwen, then you could easily come to the same conclusion that Mundy came to, is that there are no orbitals.
Huh?
You're dealing with an electrical phenomenon.
By the way, Don, who is Mundy? And why don't you translate for our listeners who Leadbetter is and so on? Because these were the people involved with Theosophy, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's actually the philosophy of matter. You know, people who don't accept the atomic orbital paradigm. You know, just because the sun has a solar system orbiting around it doesn't mean that all atoms are the same. Okay?
Yeah.
With Mundy's alpha extended model theory, essentially.
Don't tell us. Do tell us who Mundy is.
Oh, Roberto Mundy, M-U-N-D-I. You want to do a Google search on him. He's worked a lot with Joe Champion, specifically doing low-energy transmutation work and research related to. But the theory is, and the same with Leadbetter and Besant, is that there are no orbitals. Instead, it's all an electrical phenomenon, which I can agree or disagree with, you know, all of the attractions rather than orbitals. And when you get to that point, then what Mundy says about orms is that they're not orbitally rearranged monoatomic elements. They're actually electrically rearranged monoatomic elements, or ERMs. So, you know, these things...
We should be on the ERMs forum.
Well, these things seriously need to be investigated, because I've made observations that agree, and a lot of my observations haven't been satisfactorily explained by the current paradigm. There's something wrong. The checkbook is not balancing. And, you know, we'll get there. Consciousness, basically Joe Champion said that we're actually making this gold and this silver during our processes. And I can understand why he would say that. Consciousness plays a huge part, especially in these materials. For an example, a person will be at work, and they'll email me to find out when their mana is going to arrive. It's usually there in their mailbox waiting for them when they send that email. Or it's already arrived in their city, and it's close enough to be communicating with them, and they'll have it in their mailbox the next day. Now, this happens over and over and over and over again. I believe what happens is that once I make that mana, I put it in their box. When I put their name on that box to ship it, I believe that it's actually tuning to them from that point on.
So, Don, one of the things you're saying, Don, here is that Ormus is conscious and is adapting itself to the person from the time you put their name on it.
That's what I believe. That's what all of my indicators say.
How fascinating.
And I have much better result with it when people realize that it's conscious and they tell it what they want it to do for them before they take it.
Oh, great advice.
Yeah, the results are tremendously different. On the forums, there was considerable debate about certain powders that are being provided to people. Some people are calling them subatomic particles. Well, that's not really saying anything. You know, you could say that orms in general are subatomic particles, but everything in matter contains subatomic particles, if they exist at all. I mean, a loaf of bread, a glass of water, your car, okay? I'm going to shift gears a little bit more here. You know, there are people talking about what the philosophic mercury is, you know, which is basically the philosophic mercury permeates everything. You know, some people believe that it's electricity. And when people are doing electrolysis-related work, it absolutely is the sophic mercury would be the electricity. There's still yet one higher above that. Some people believe that it's radiation. That these low-level backgrounds radiation fuel transmutations in general in nature, that are constantly going on, some people say that's the sophic mercury. And I have to agree that that's another one. But the highest form of sophic mercury is actually consciousness. That's the goal of every alchemist. As he raises his own consciousness, he's able to raise the level of matter around him to higher and higher vibration. That is, in essence, the great work. And going back to radiation for a moment, I did an experiment a few months ago where I took some manna that I made from Masada Dead Sea Salt, and I put some of the wet precipitate into a high-quality 1810 stainless steel Dutch oven. And I placed this on an electric burner, specifically wanting to get the EMF from the burner. I covered it tightly, put a 5-pound iron weight on top of it, and slowly raised the temperature and held it at 90 degrees C. Now you realize that's below the boiling point of water. I held it there for 40 hours, and in that time period, the stainless steel Dutch oven had disintegrated itself to the point where it literally looked like a peeled onion. I sent pictures to Barry Carter and Joe Lello and some other people. But in no time did the material even boil. There was nothing at all, absolutely no reason for a high-quality stainless steel vessel like that to be just annihilated like it was. The only thing that could cause it, it had to be radiation. Well, people are out talking about, well, if radiation is a philosophical mercury, they want to work with uranium and all these high-level radioactive materials. It's totally the wrong way to go, in my opinion. The manna that we're making in the wet, dry, and burn processes contains the low-level radiation that drives manifestation in general. And when you abuse it, the radiation turns to a form that will actually do some pretty negative things. And consciousness, there's a difference between consciousness and awareness. Philosophers believe that all matter, everything, is conscious. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily animate or necessarily even aware.
How would you describe the difference between the attributes of awareness and the attributes of consciousness?
A rock can be absolutely conscious without necessarily being aware. Yeah, I don't want to go into the psychology of it all, because yeah, I'm really not prepared to do that.
Okay,
I'm just covering things that I wanted to talk about and put out there.
Sure, great.
Okay. There's a difference between being awake and being asleep, you know.
Yep.
You know, a lot of things come down to being actually that simple. I've had a lot of people, too. We'll go back to talk about electricity again. We make basically all of the elixirs in our lab. And at one time or another, actually quite often, we'll open a bottle and it'll shock us. Some of them are actually painful. You see a half to three-quarter inch arc coming from the lip of the bottle to your finger. And you know, this is, David Hudson would say that the Meissner field is charged up, and when you open it up, it collapses, and this energy goes into you through you to ground. And I have a lot of people email me, it shocked me, what's wrong? Oh, it shocked me so bad my lips went numb. They were drinking directly out of the bottle. So this manna we're making appears to contain not only the low-level radiation that helps to drive life and all of reality, it also contains electricity. And, you know, people will email me, well, I've heard about this shocking me. It didn't shock me when I opened it up. I say, that's great. I'd rather have what charge is built up in it going into my body than being dissipated on my finger. Material that we make, when it's made properly. It doesn't need any other charging. In fact, if you overcharge her too much, bills just keep collapsing on themselves. Over a period of time, this can actually cause it to try to revert back to metal. The people don't need to get too carried away with trying to charge things up, you know, especially if you use the wrong processes. You're liable to cause problems.
Don, let me ask you this. I was always fascinated by the term of charging ormus. And it appears to me that ormus is mostly charged by consciousness and intention itself. Is that your experience?
That's absolutely true. When we're making it, we don't imprint it. Okay? So basically, we enlist our higher selves and we try to make the best, most pure metal that we can. It begins an imprintation process once the name is placed on the box. And it gets charged through the actual processes itself. When we're stirring it and making it, we're actually putting vortices into the material. And even though we don't use magnets or anything, it's still a vortex running across the Earth field. So it's getting charged right there. And plus, it's getting charged again when it's shipped. That's shown that we get shocked here in the lab by it, and then people get shocked at their destination by it. People don't need to be in a great hurry to charge up their mana. The Earth does that for us, always has. What we provide is the proper form for that, okay? Now I don't want to sound like a commercial. I'm just telling you what I know. I'm going by my direct observations over the past 10 years.
Excuse me, can I come in for a moment?
Yeah.
Hi, Don. It's Alan in Scotland. How are you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Yeah, great. It's lovely to talk to you again. Just a quick comment to do with shipping Ormus. And possibly, if we're honest, the United States' habit to irradiate everything in the last few years that's going in transit. Do you remember when I visited you in Florida a couple of years ago, and you gave me a brand new dose of your white dove? And I took some of that there and then, and a couple of hours later, at the workshop we were at, I was so blown away with it, I had to go and lie down. I never got that from the stuff that you used to send to me in Britain. And for sure, apart from the fact, you know, you were making it for me when I was coming, apart from that, I think there has to be some kind of thing that the mana can sometimes suffer in transit when it's being sent. Did you agree
with
that?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I don't mean to interrupt you, Alan. What happened is when you first took that, the very first time you took that,
yeah,
it raced you past the threshold.
Oh, sure.
Okay? It happens to a lot of people. A lot of people will say, well, the very first dose I took was great, but after that it didn't seem to do anything. Well, that one dose raised them up, raised their vibrational frequency up permanently. After that, the effects of it are less profound, but it's still in there working. Balancing the left and right hemispheres of your brain, feeding your light body, enabling your consciousness to talk to your body. You're still all doing the same thing. I have people all the time, when I ship it to them, they'll come back with the exact same thing. The first dose I took, I thought it was amazing. After that, I didn't feel anything. Well, it worked for them after being shipped. The combination of the aluminum foil, the plastic, and the cardboard does an excellent job of shielding the material. I've had some return to me from Israel, and I had shipped it to Israel. People, it was rejected by customs or something, and it was sent back again. I open it up, and it shocks me when I take the top off the bottle. And it still tasted exactly like it did when I put it in the bottle. I don't think there's any huge mystery in shipping it.
Don, yeah, I agree with you. I was just passing that as a comment because I don't want to tell anybody who's listening that your white dove didn't do anything for me. We're going back a couple of years now as you know, and the white dove that you originally sent me, I wasn't well at all at the time, and your white dove put me into such a state of detox that it just about, you know, I didn't know where I was. And it took me 3 or 4 months to come out of that. When I came out of that, I felt at least 5 years younger. All the health problems I had were seriously sorted, that I decided to devote, you know, my future concentration of study to all this kind of work. And it's wonderful, and, you know, thank you so much for your help on all this. It's only an interesting one to say that it was after that, to remind you, it was after that that I came over to visit you, and you gave me a brand new sample, and it was too much for me. Probably that's connected, and you'll tell me how it's connected. It was just to ratify the thing that we talk about from time to time about how sometimes man doesn't ship too well with x-rays and stuff, Don. That was all, and so sorry to take you off the track. Please go back to where you were, because I'm enjoying it hugely. All the best. Cheers.
Well, you remember, you're referring to down in Naples, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, that's such a high-energy place.
Really?
I had that manna sitting there. That's in the middle of three energetic vortices in a triangle.
Mm.
And the manna sat there for a couple of days, and it was charging the whole time. I could look over at it, and the auric field was just getting larger and larger and larger. So, you know, that would make a difference in what you took there.
Amazing.
And what you took from there. That is a huge power spot.
Anyway, just for what it's worth, from that time to this time now, I've been following everything you're doing, that you taught me, how they seem taught you in that, at that time in your life, and I'm enjoying so much everything we're doing, and I hope very much we're going to do a lot of things together in the future.
I think that you and I are going to be working together for years to come.
I'm looking forward to it so much. Thanks, Don.
Move on.
Sorry if I've digressed for everybody else that's listening.
That's great to hear from someone in the UK.
You brought up an interesting subject there, Don, and that was the power spot of Naples. You mentioned in Naples.
Yeah, it's exactly in the same area as the mystery school where Barry and I gave presentations. It's just
what are the qualities of that power spot, and why does it empower Ormus?
It's in the middle of three energetic vortices.
Ley lines.
Yeah, there's this tremendous energy flow from the Earth. It's coming from the Earth and heading up. I mean, it's amazing. It's just, I can't describe it. I don't have the tools to describe it. But I wanted to thank Alan again for bringing that up, because that's a common question. You know, people will take it one time, and then they'll feel like it isn't working. When the first time it zoomed them. The best explanation I've been able to come up for is that it's actually raising the level of your consciousness. It's done in a permanent way.
When I first
and
took,
after that, it still works. Same initial effect.
When I first took B vitamins back in the 60s, late 60s, it was better than drugs. First time I took it, I got really, really zoomed. I thought, boy, why would anybody ever smoke pot? This was so good. And the second time I took it, I kind of felt it. And the third time I took it, I didn't notice anything. It was the huge contrast between not having enough B vitamins and having enough B vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very similar thing with the Ormus.
Your appreciation for Saturday Night Live and for Saturday morning cartoons, you have to kind of chalk that one up to some of that pot, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I'll throw something out in here, because I'm still trying to work my way back around to the consciousness part. Stem cell research, undifferentiated or fetal cells. Now, theoretically, they can grow to become any living tissues or organ. Now, looking at the arms and ormus, I feel that it's undifferentiated matter. And I have a feeling that Mundy and Joe Champion would probably agree with me there. It can possibly grow to become whatever element or compounds you need. It could be subconsciously in the body or consciously through guidance. But the alchemical perspective, again, is that everything is alive. So if this material is alive and even more so conscious, a modern alchemical perspective could be undifferentiated matter and elements as a result of undefined conscious manifestation or unconscious manifestation or undefined consciousness itself. Now there we're getting to the crust of the biscuit of alchemy. When you raise your consciousness level up to the highest possibility, then you have completed the great work. You're above all griefs and all fears. You're able to manifest at will. And what is guiding that and all of matter is a consciousness, yours, mine, ours. And the consciousness of the ascended masters or God, your higher self, whatever paradigm you want to use. But the key behind all of this, working with all of this material, and eventually understanding this material, is that you need to interact consciously with it. And that's the biggest gift that I can give the ORMS work groups at this point in time. Because it's something that isn't understood or something that's way under practice a lot of the time. I'm hoping this coming across coherent enough. And we've made some breakthroughs. Since Crystal has come down here, she's made it possible because she knows processes. She has gifts of her own. She's an old soul. Crystal has a lot of power in that she's able to discern symbiotic relationships, and she's able to discern harmonic balances. And the oils that she and I have been developing are really nothing short of amazing in the difference in efficacies and potency and the results that we've been getting from them.
Hey, Don, could you speak up?
Shortly, I'm going to introduce her, and she can begin telling you about it. And she'll also tell a little bit about our philosophy. Now, first I wanted to say, do you have any questions about some of the things I covered? I know that it seems on the surface not quite that coherent, but if you look through it and listen to it a few more times at your leisure when Barry puts it up.
It seems very, very coherent, Don. It's great.
So, Don, one of the things that I've discovered at the end of here is that consciousness itself seems to be the major imprinter of ORMIS. And I hold the philosophy that ORMIS is like a newborn baby. And it is a hugely radiant manifester of whatever it is programmed with. And I program the ORMIS that I make with a number of intentions, and I hold it almost as like a newborn baby, like I just said, and it doesn't know any different but to manifest the intentions that I give it. As a newborn baby, it just absorbs them all and then replays it back in the universe, you might say, as a manifestation, because it's like captured consciousness in liquid form. Does that
right.
jive with that? I mean, does that also describe aspects of what you were talking about?
Undifferentiated matter defined by consciousness. Yes? Would you say that?
Yeah.
How about we take it one step further? That's one of the things I was getting at. We, through our consciousness, are actually manifesting this material because we're making the conditions right for it to manifest in the processes. You know, a lot of people that do these processes that don't know any better are liable to get just magnesium and calcium from their Dead Sea. Where if you're consciously intending to manifest that 70% gold, you're more likely to have a positive result. Consciousness is the absolute master of the equation. It can't be overstated.
And it permitted us somehow to manifest this undifferentiated matter, this newborn, in the first place. That's amazing, right?
Yeah, that's what you need, is to put your consciousness into it. And any help that you can get, God, your higher self, whatever paradigm you wish. But we are actually manifesting it ourselves when we make it. Joe Champion and Mundy are in agreement at this point in time. So there is some consensus. Some people don't like those people. Me, I can't understand why people constantly want to judge other people, but it's one of human frailties that we have to try to get beyond.
Don, this is Alan again. You're absolutely right about what you're saying, because I have had the odd occasion, not too often, when I'm making Ormus for some clients. Most of my clients are in France. And maybe I've had some other reasons why I'm not in good form or something. Or also, it depends, I guess, on the phases of the moon and such. I've had some strange results. But I know for sure, if I prepare myself properly and I'm making it exactly the best way I can, I get more predictable results. So I've certainly seen the situation that would tie in with what you're saying. It's very important that you have to focus on doing what you're doing.
Have you seen that any astrological differences, say, between moon phases and such? I've noticed that in the past, I get the most precipitate and the best result on the full moon. But a lot of the women I talk to, including Crystal, get their best result on the new moon.
Actually, Daddy, that's the other way around.
It's a big new moon today, by the way.
There's a difference between the male and the female energy, and they get different results at different moon phases.
My problem, Donna, is I got both sides in my head.
And I was asking Alan if he had noticed any of the moon phase like I have.
Completely. I once got three times the Dead Sea result near the full moon. Three times. You shouldn't get as much as that, but I got it.
Okay.
Crystal, you had a comment.
Oh, I was just telling Daddy, I think he had gotten it backwards. Most women, including myself, tend to get more precipitate on the full moon, whereas men gets it on the new moon. And that completely makes sense. I mean, the moon is such a feminine energy, Luna, you know. For women to, when the moon is full, it has its full feminine power. So it makes more sense for a woman to be able to manifest more Ormus when the moon is at its fullest power, whereas male, which are more identified with the sun and that masculine energy, that when the moon is new, that men would get more results, be able to manifest more Ormus on the new moon.
Now, she's right about that, because I cross stream there mostly when I'm giving these lectures and teaching people. It's mostly women there. I'm mostly telling them what happens with the women. And so I forget that I have to switch gears, you know. But she's right. It's usually the full moon for the ladies and the new moon for men. And it's
and another lady piped up and said it's a new moon today.
Yes,
and
again,
so,
you better be making some Ormus today.
And I'm not usually making Ormus on a new moon, so I haven't been able to do comparison. One of the things I do notice is I tend to collect my ocean water on the waxing full moon, not the waning full moon, like just on the waxing side of the full moon. And I notice that tends to be more male.
Yeah, well, the earth energies will be pulling your arms up in the water, okay, just like it's affecting the tides. And there's usually, people don't really realize the way the tides work, and the dew and the waters all work the same way. Is that it leads the moon. The moon is pushing it ahead of itself. So those few days when it's waxing, when it's coming on, are the best days to gather the dew and any material from nature. But anyway, I'm going to introduce Crystal and let her...
Oh, I have a question before you go. Can I ask a question?
Okay.
I've been waiting. You had mentioned about the auric field on your Ormus when you were in Naples. And I actually have seen your Ormus lined up with a lot of other Ormus products, and you had a huge field on your Ormus relative to the other ones. And I wanted to know, what is the benefit of a larger ort field?
It's a higher energetic manifestation. There's more energy present, so it has a larger aura. Or as David Hudson's paradigm might say, that the Meissner field has a higher charge than the others.
And then the other question is, how do you get the auric field larger on your product?
He's just that good.
Come on now, don't embarrass me now.
Okay.
It's through consciousness, through intent. I've been doing this a very long time, and I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of cosmic help.
Mm.
Okay, and that's all it is. There's nothing that anyone else can't do, but it might take them 10 years of practice to get there.
So when you say through intent, Don, do you language
intent.
That intent?
It's consciousness. It's conscious.
Do you
intent
speak that intent?
Conscious intent to make powerful, pure mana.
But do you meditate it into the product, or do you actually speak to the product?
It's more like a prayer.
Hmm.
For me, it's silent. It can take any form you want. I get myself into a semi-meditative state, and then I go enlist my higher self and helpers with the intent of making pure, powerful mana with the intent of healing and enlightenment. And I do no other programming or anything whatsoever. I stay in that state as undisturbed as possible during the entire process. And when I'm done, then I feel like I just gave birth. But, you know, that's what's going on with me. That's how I do it. If you're a person who routinely meditates or whatnot, then you know that when you meditate a lot, you find it easier and easier to get into that state. But I've been making mana a long time, and when I'm ready to make mana, I'm just quiet for a moment, and then I go into the lab and start working. And while I'm working the entire time I'm doing anything related to it, I'm in the meditative, prayerful state. Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Sure, you're welcome. Okay, who else? Hit star 7.
Don, it's Alan again. We want to hear Crystal. Before we go, can you think about something before, maybe to talk about afterwards or some other time? It's an unusual one, so I won't spend too long on it. You've got some solution that you're about to titrate, and it's a bit too big for the beakers that it's in. So before you titrate it, you split it into two beakers. It's absolutely a clear solution. You're just going to do the final titration up or down, whatever it's going to be. Now, you pour it from one beaker
Ellen,
to the next.
Ellen, would you please
beaker.
Translate titration? Ellen, please
titration
tell
is
titration.
Where you're going to add sodium hydroxide to go up in the wet method to go up in the wet method in pH, or to come down in the dry method with hydrochloric acid. And the point is that I'm making, you've got a solution a bit too concentrated, so you tip it into two beakers and do it in two stages. The solution is completely clear and filtered as it should be before you start. But the first solution doesn't give you much ormus, and the second solution gives a lot of ormus. So what's the actual, in quotes, ormus doing? Is it sinking to the bottom of a clear solution? It's an interesting question that might be worthy of a big debate later. It's just an idea for Don to take on board and see where he comes up with it. Apart from that, leave it just now. Let's hear Crystal.
I would say, actually right offhand, that the main thing that's happening is that the orms are actually settling more to the bottom, and you need to stir it up before you separate.
Well, there's not much you can see, so how do we justify this in terms of our technical idea of where they go, John? Don, that's the point. Anyway, it's a non sequitur, and it's not exactly direct to what we're talking about. Let's hear Crystal just now, and maybe it's something to do with things I thought about for later. Yeah. Thanks, anyway.
Well, there's one more thing I can tell you about that. I had a friend, someone that I taught down in Naples. She did the same thing, but she had to split it between three different vessels to precipitate.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, she precipitated and got her normal amount.
Mm.
The second one she precipitated and got the normal amount for that amount of solution, you know, what she expected. And the third one was totally and absolutely different.
Yeah.
Cosmic event.
Yeah.
Now, you have to realize that while cosmic events, alignments and such, take a while to come in to happen, that the manifestation of the event can appear to be instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like if you're trying to stand eggs up during an alignment, and suddenly the eggs will stand up and stay there for 6 hours and then fall back over of their own volition.
Right.
So you're seeing a manifestation of a cosmic event that appeared to happen suddenly. It actually just reached an apex of energy that was able to affect the matter at hand.
Don, that's very interesting, because I'm seeing lots of stuff, including with your new hydrogen peroxide procedure, your new black sand second stage procedure that's been on the forum in the last couple of weeks. As you know, I've been working with you on that. There's all kinds of stuff like that with it. It's hugely interesting, and I'm looking forward very much to doing more work with that, because I'm sure what we're actually doing is we're dealing with black sands. Your sands is not the same as mine, which is interesting for anybody else who's listening. Mine are basically sea sands from the north of Scotland, where it's very volcanic in history. Yours are mine tailings, I gather. But the idea is, as you've explained to me in the beginning, that we're not getting the full benefit out of the material. We're leaving half of it behind. And certainly,
yeah,
I'm getting all kinds of reactions from this, from the science that I've been working with, and it's hugely interesting, Don.
Yeah, unless you're absolutely breaking up the sodium burn material to a point where it's like 200 mesh or smaller, we're only getting about half of the M state out of that burn.
Mm.
So by taking it down into the form of aqua regia, HCl and H2O2, we're able to break it up, free it, precipitate it out, it falls out with the oxides. Then we dry it out, boil it, and lye, and it ties it into the sodium hydroxide solution. Then we can precipitate it back down again. And, Alan, if you happen to have a little bit of that material, it has to weigh at least a gram dried.
Yeah.
If you can dry me out a gram.
Sure, I'll do that, Don.
And mail it to me as soon as possible. I'll add it to my assay tree.
Excellent. No, I'll do that, because I'm getting about two to one from the first precipitate to the second precipitate.
That's
so
right.
It's almost as if, you know, if you do the second stage, you're getting about 2 to 1, which means that we're wasting. As you just said to me, you know, just now, we're wasting at least 50% of the material that could have been there that we could have had benefit from.
Exactly.
Exactly.
If you'll send me two samples, send me a sample that's wet and a sample that's dry that weighs at least a gram.
Sure. I'll get rid of that immediately. Meanwhile, Don, let's go back to the agenda, which we should have been at. Looking forward to hearing Crystal. Take care, Don.
You too. Sorry to bore you with the research, but as you can see, there are people doing it. We're not just talking about it, okay? But anyway, I'd like to introduce my daughter. It's Crystal Dawn Nance, and she's my shining light here. And take it away, Crystal. I'm going to go take a break.
Okay. Thanks. Can everybody hear me okay?
You're Crystal. Yeah. Lovely.
Okay. What I'm going to do, I know that we've already taken a lot of time, so I'll try to get through my part pretty quick. But what I want to do is, first I'm going to give a little bit of background on myself, and as Dennis asked me earlier, how did I arrive to this point in time and space? And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the philosophy that I work from, and kind of explain what I believe Ormus and the Ormus oils, how they work and what they're doing. And then I'm going to talk about the different Ormus oils that I make currently, talk about their differences and the benefits and the effects I see from them. And then I'll talk about my processes a little bit, because I know that Dennis had hinted that I would, so I will. And then I'll talk briefly about future developments. So does that sound okay with everybody?
Great.
Okay. Well, as you know, Don's my father, so right there, yeah, I think alchemy must have been in the genes. But I've always, even from a little girl, having out-of-body experiences and all kinds of weird stuff happening, I've always been interested in the esoteric stuff, just always, learning astrology when I was 9, tarot cards on up, exploring Wicca, shamanism, Kabbalah, everything. Well, anyway, as I became an adult, and I decided to check out, you know, modern sciences and stuff, so I got a bachelor's degree in biology and a master's degree in environmental science, and I worked for a while as a conservation biologist for the state of Virginia, and I also taught at the university there, introductory biology and environmental science, and last year, you know, I was just teaching, but it was part-time, and I was looking for a job to pay the bills and stuff and, you know, really start my career. I'd been in academia for a long time, and I just couldn't find anything. And you know, as hard as I tried, my mind kept pulling me back to the spiritual stuff, the stuff that I was born intrigued with. And so, I kind of got to the point where it was like, okay, the universe is telling me that you need to take the modern sciences that you've learned, take the academic background you have, and now apply it to your true interest, spirituality. And, of course, over the last 10 years, Daddy has been practicing the alchemy and researching perfect time to kind of make my segue and try to make my own contributions. And so I moved to Florida, and here I am, and that's how I'm here. So, anyway, so I guess I want to talk to about next kind of the philosophy that we work from, and again, like I said, you know, how I believe that this material works. Of course, there's all different opinions and paradigms out there, so this is my personal one, and I actually this past week just wrote up this up and put it in a kind of a cohesive form and posted on my website, so I'm kind of just going to go from what I'd already written. It was kind of interesting. I actually wrote it before I realized I was doing the call, so this works out well. Anyway, as Daddy mentioned, you know, alchemists work in the three worlds at once. There's the spiritual world, an elemental world, and then the material, physical, mundane world. And I think the whole point of what Daddy was trying to say earlier is that, you know, you can't follow the wet method instructions like it's a recipe book and like you're making a cake. There's so much more to it. You've got to bring in the spiritual and the elemental as in addition to actually doing the physical work. You need to be aware and a conscious and bring in your higher self or the source or however you want to talk about it. So, you know, it seems to be the theme of the call, but we both feel that it's very, very important. And also now, this is where I kind of get into science, which is my favorite part of this. You know, quantum physics now tells us that matter has particle-like and wave-like properties, and that the subatomic particles that make up matter, such as the protons, neutrons, and electrons, are really, in essence, pure energy. Now, compare matter to light. Light is also can either be a wave or a stream of particles called photons. And photons are these packets of pure energy in which the amount of energy is directly proportional to the frequency of the light. How high is it vibrating? How fast is it vibrating? So new science then tells us that all matter, including our physical bodies, consists of forms of light and is therefore pure energy in essence. So you can think of it as matter is light but at a low frequency. Slower frequency, denser frequency. So you can think of matter as being dense light, low energy light. And so thus, drawing on the implications of these modern physics, you can conclude that human bodies are made of light held in matter. And so, you know, essentially we have a light body as well as a material body. You know, a lot of people do chakra energy meditations and energy work, or do light body activations and stuff like this. Also, biological science scientists are telling us that our cells communicate via light. And so all this kind of supports the idea of a light body that we have. Now, going back to alchemy, the goal of alchemy, as we've all heard, is to transform the base or common into the pure or rare. Right? You hear the allegory, alchemist turns lead into gold. Lead being the base, impure, mundane material, and gold being the exalted spiritual material. So you can think of it, put it another way, you can think of it as alchemy being considered as the transmutation of matter into spirit or matter into light. And so when you transmute matter into light, that means raising its vibrational frequency. So you're transmuting it from a base mundane state, matter, low frequency, dense, slow matter, to a pure exalted state, high frequency, high energy light. And it's interesting, you know, alchemy is a hermetic art. I'm sure everybody's heard of the Emerald Tablets by Both, or Hermes Trismegistus, I don't know how to say that word, but and so alchemy is considered a hermetic art. And the goal, you know, in making the Philosopher's Stone and making the Elixir of Life was to confer higher spiritual consciousness and cure physical maladies and confer eternal life. Well, it's interesting that the alchemists called the light body the immortal body. And so when alchemists are creating their manas, their elixirs, their philosopher's stone, or, you know, what we're calling ormus, in pursuit of the spiritual and physical perfection and eternal life, we're creating substances that are going to build up our light body into a strong immortal body. So this is where kind of the three worlds meet, and I like to think of the three worlds when you're doing the great work. The great work is realized at the apex of that triangle where the three worlds meet. And so that's kind of what I feel like I do as an alchemist, is the transmuting the matter, the mundane matter of the noble metals and platinum groups into their exalted light state, where they are then used to build up the immortal light body to achieve spiritual and physical perfection. And so that's kind of where I'm at in my philosophy on what we're doing. And it's just fascinating to me how new physics can so neatly dovetail into the philosophy of alchemy in that way. Maybe not everybody will agree, but that's kind of my philosophy and my father's philosophy and where we work from. So when I talk about the ormus oils, I want you to keep that in the back of your mind, that the number one thing that any of the ormus does, including in the ormus oil, is to build up the light body. And by doing that, I kind of think of the light body as our own individual portion of source, or the unmanifest, or God, or however you want to put it. And so when we build up and strengthen our light body, we make greater that connection to source or to God. And we're kind of opening up that channel, and so that we have better spiritual awareness and knowledge. And, you know, I think in one of David Hudson's lectures, probably the Tampa one, the one I liked better anyway, you know, you can think of it as the spirit body or the light body that drives the physical body. And so that's why, you know, we hear on the Ormus forums all the physical healings that happen. Well, it's because we're building up the light body, and the light body is driving the physical body. And so you get that cohesion there. You're allowing the cells to communicate to each other better through light, and you're also allowing greater communication between your own individual portion with source. And so kind of keep that in the back of your minds while I'm talking about the ormus oils, because I'll talk, you know, that's always there. Anytime you're talking about ormus, that aspect is always there. But I'll also talk about some of the physical differences and effects that you'll see with the different oils. And I'm actually going to take a quick sip of water right now. Hold on a second. Thank you. Sorry about that. So right now, currently, I have available three different oils. Two of them I consider to be kind of the basic classic Ormus oils. One is made from grapeseed oil, and I take the grapeseed oil and infuse it with Orms from the Dead Sea Salt. And the other is olive oil that I use, and that's the base oil, and I infuse it again with Ormus from the Dead Sea Salt. Now, so the differences between the two come down to the oils being used, because the Ormus source in both is the same. And if you don't know, the Dead Sea Salts, the Ormus content assays to be around 70% gold and the rest rhodium and iridium. Well, gold is very good for opening up the third eye and increasing psychic awareness and such. And rhodium and iridium are considered to be the healing ormuses, the ones that affect the most physical healing. So with the grapeseed oil, David Hudson and his chemists found that grapeseed oil is very high in rhodium and iridium naturally. So when I take the grapeseed oil and infuse it with the Ormus from the Dead Sea Salt, you have an extremely healing oil. You get all the spiritual effects that I've been talking about, but in addition, you get the physical healing from the rhodium and the iridium. So I consider that the classic healing oil that we have. And through my own personal experiences, I found that the grapeseed oil, and I call the Ormus I make of that celestial vine, I found that to be excellent for really deep tissue and joint healing. And I kind of found that out through my own personal experiences. About 5 years ago, I was doing aerobics on a concrete floor with no padding, and I ended up having a stress fracture in my ankles that over the 5 years just would never heal. So I was always limping, or if I walked a lot, it really bothered me and ached. And so last July, my father was like, well, why don't you make up some of this Ormus oil and put it on there and see if it helps? So over the phone, I was still in Virginia at the time, over the phone he gave me, told me how to make it and everything, and I really put my intention in there. I really, wanted this to help my ankle because, 5 years every day being in pain, it was just a lot. And so I made up the Ormus oil and put it on there, and it really helped. And then, of course, my scientific background and having to follow the scientific method, I had to, compare that to, how is this, is it really doing it, or maybe is it massaging action or whatever, but is it really the Ormus? And so I compared it to putting on other, like, arthritis creams like Flexol and stuff, and it just blew it away from the actual effects of helping my ankle to just the energy I got from it. It was such a nicer, gentler energy than the harsh energy from those arthritis creams. And so from that time on, I was sold, and it was just a few years later that I moved here to take up the work anyway. So that's the grapeseed oil. You get the spiritual aspects of building up the light body in all of these, as I mentioned. But with the healing, I found that it's very good for that deep tissue joint healing. And I think that's because it's got the double whammy, double concentration of the rhodium and iridium ormus in there. And then the other kind of classic ormus oil that I make is made with a base oil of olive oil. And again, the ormus source that is infused into it is from the Dead Sea Salt. Now, the olive oil has a very long, prestigious history throughout the centuries, whatever, of being, considered to be very healing from Egyptian times on, and it's listed many times in the Bible as such a healing food. Well, I found that through my research that olives are very high in copper, and that kind of makes sense when I tell you that the olive oil, ormus oil, or what I call biblical earth, ormus oil, is very good for skin conditions, acne, psoriasis, eczema, anything like that. And that makes sense because copper is very good for those things. So again, it's a very healing, classic healing oil, but it's used, it's used for slightly different physical conditions. And one thing I forgot to mention that I want to mention is that, why ormus oils? Why oils? And there's two reasons for this. One is that our skin, obviously, is our biggest organ. And so the ormus, I believe, is transdermally conducted into your body. And it doesn't have to go through the digestive system. It doesn't have to encounter the pH of 1 hydrochloric acid in our stomach to work and everything. It's allowed to just be absorbed right in and go right to work, helping the cells communicate to each other and building up the light body. Also, the ormus oil, when you're putting it on your skin, you're actually putting it right in your energetic field, or your auric field, and it allows it, it's interacting at that in that way to help build up your auric strength and your energy field. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, our skin is our means of contact between the in here and the out there. And so much of the physical problems that we have in our lives is because we're being attacked by what's out there, environmental toxins, EMF, whatever. And so it kind of makes sense to put that layer of ormus on yourself. You know, it's working its way in into your body to build up your light body without having to go through the digestive system. It's building up your auric field to put that much more of a buffer between you and the rest of the world. It just makes sense to me. And so that's why ormus oils. So sorry for that segue there. And then the third ormus oil that I'm making right now, it was actually kind of interesting. I do all my best thinking in the shower. Well, I was getting out of the shower, and I was putting on one of the ormus oils. I don't remember if it's the grapeseed or the olive oil, but I always use them after the shower myself. And all of a sudden, this idea came to me. Why not use copper ormus? And that's going to be great for anti-aging properties. And it even came full-fledged with a name, Infinity Oil, Infinite Possibilities of a Useful You, whatever. And what's interesting about that is that at the time, I did not know that copper had that property, those properties of actually helping make someone look younger. And I'll talk a little bit more about how that works. But, all I knew was that a couple of weeks before at an energy reading workshop, a friend had told me that I really needed to concentrate on bringing more feminine energy into my ormus oils. And so this was my solution. And in case you don't know, copper is ruled by the planet Venus, so it's very feminine energy. And then every woman wants to look younger, right? So that's feminine energy there, too. So anyway, I decided to create this oil that has the copper ormus. And just to tell you, copper helps to increase melanin production and collagen production. So melanin, when we start to get gray hairs, we're not making as much melanin as we used to when we were younger. So increasing melanin production can turn gray hair back to its original color. And collagen, what happens when we get wrinkles is that the collagen that we have gets damaged. But we don't make enough extra like we did when we were younger to repair that collagen and to replace it and to fill in those lines. And so copper is very good at increasing melanin production and collagen production so that you have a decrease in wrinkles, you have firmer skin, more uplifted skin, and it also, the same idea, it helps with scars and stretch marks. The same idea with wrinkles where you have damaged collagen. The copper helps to get rid of that damaged collagen and then build up healthy new collagen. And so that's how the Infinity Oil works. And as far as the spiritual side of the Infinity Oil, I think that the copper ormus really adds another layer to that, and that, you know, we're talking about anti-aging ormus oil. And so you kind of think of like childlike innocence and being open to the world and joy with life, and, you know, you're optimistic. You haven't been beaten down yet. And I think that the Infinity Oil kind of brings that energy into you so that you have more energy and you have more, you're more open to ideas and you're not so closed-minded and you have that joy for life. So kind of, you know, the spiritual energy matches the physical effects of the Infinity Oil. And again, I use it. I use it on my face every day after my shower, and I really feel those energies. I really think it works. So those are the oils that I have available now, and I'm going to go into the processes, and when I do that, it'll kind of explain why I haven't been developing more at a very fast rate. Now, there's more to it than what you might think. So I'm going to get into the processes, and I'll start with the process that I use for the two basic classic ormus oils, the grape seed oil and the olive oil. For those, and many of you might have seen the video that Barry Carter put out where, you know, you just put in some Dead Sea salts and you put in the oil and you shake it up and let it sit overnight and ta-da, you got your ormus oils. Well, that is the basics, but I do take it further than that. Again, you know, we're not just copying a recipe to make a cake. We're doing conscious spiritual work with material. And so the shaking of it, and you can use a homeopathic term, the succussion, I do that in a specific magical sequence, and it'll be up to you to come up with your own because I'm not sharing that part of it. But I do the succussion in a specific magical sequence over a long period of time. Now, succussion, or the shaking of it, creates a vortex within the oil, and that helps the ormus to leave the Dead Sea salts and enter into the oil. And we all know that ormus likes salt. It feels safe in there. It's stabilized by salt. But it also likes the oil. And actually, I would probably prefer the oil, and some people have even talked about ormus having an oily or a greasy state. And so the vortex helps to induce the ormus to leave the Dead Sea salts and go into the oil, charging the Meissner field and all that. And so it's a very important that you have sustained creation of the vortex, and that also, you know, when I do it in a magical sequence, with intent, I do everything with intent, you're really adding to the effect of what you're doing, why, you know, instead of just shaking it, not knowing why, you're you know, building on that, and you know why, you know what you're trying to do with it, and so we're putting that into it, and so I've built upon that. So this can take a long, long time. I do this a long time, and then I'll let it sit overnight. And so that's the two basic oils, the grapeseed oil and the olive oil with the Dead Sea salt. And, you know at the end, if you've got the ormus out of the Dead Sea salt, because the Dead Sea salts go from being white to being very clear, and you can just feel it. You know, when you're working with it, you know you can feel the ormus coming up out of the salts into the oil. Now, when I had my idea of making a copper ormus oil, that's not so simple. You know, how do we do this? You know, and I told Daddy my idea, and he was like, yeah, that's a good idea. And he was like, oh, so we need to think about how to do this. Because there's a couple of things that you need to remember when you're working with the oils. One is that I pride myself on not using any chemicals in the making of the oils. Two is that you don't want to introduce any water into the oil. Because as soon as you introduce water into the oil, you introduce bacteria and the possibility of the oil not having as long of a shelf life and becoming rancid and all that. And the third thing I found out is that you want to keep the oil the same pH that it is. You don't want to be changing the pH of the oil. Specifically, you don't want to be increasing the pH of the oil to make it more base. And an interesting story about this, first time trying to make the copper ormus oil, you know, we decided to use my father makes a manna called Doves of Venus, and we decided to try to go ahead and use some of the, it wasn't the final product, but it was a part of the procedure where there was still lye. But I'm sure a lot of people do. When you add lye to oil, you get soap. So I made my first ormus soap. It's not available for sale yet, but I don't know if it ever will be, but I thought that was interesting. I made ormus soap. But also I found out that you don't want, anytime you add a material to your skin that's basic, you're drying out the skin. The skin likes, you know, any creams or lotions you put on, it should be a little acidic. It's best. I think a pH of 6.5 is good. So anytime you put oil on that is higher in pH, especially around 10 or 11, that's going to be really drying to the skin, and so that kind of defeats the purpose. And so I had to get past, you know, figure out a procedure that's going to get past all these. I can't simply take my father's ormus that he makes or the ormus that I make and just add it to the oil. I had to come up with a new procedure to get past all these obstacles. And so we actually hit some ancient alchemy books and was looking through there and found a process that worked for us, at least with the copper right now. And that is, the copper ormus oil is made from pure copper metal, okay? And what I do is I get it into as fine a particles as I can manually, you know, snipping it up or whatever, using a saw to grind it down. And then I grind it with salt with a mortar and pestle. And then after that, after I've gotten everything ground up really good, and what you're doing when you're grinding is you're putting these scratches and stuff on the copper metal, kind of helping along the process, because you need to disaggregate the copper metal into copper ormus. That's where you're going through. So when you're grinding it with the salt, you're opening it up and allowing it to get to that where it will disaggregate. And then over flame, over fire, because you don't want to use any EMF, I would heat up that ground up copper and salt. The second degree heat, the alchemy term, and then take it off and grind it up and heat it up. It's calcining and grinding, and I do that over and over again for a long time, until long time, days, until all the copper has been converted into copper ormus. Now, the interesting thing with this material is that as the copper is disaggregating, it actually changes colors, which is really cool. And so, you know, you can ask, well, how do I know when all the copper has been disaggregated or the majority of it has been disaggregated? Well, you know, a simple answer to that is when it stops changing, when the material reaches a plateau and it doesn't change anymore, because we have some nice colors come along through there. And so once I have that, now I have this fine powder, but doesn't have the copper metal anymore, but has the copper ormus, beautiful color that, you know, I didn't add any dye or anything to it, no chemicals at all, a completely natural process that you can imagine the Egyptians did, you know, just salt, copper, and flame, and grinding it up. And then I added it to, and I, at this point, I was kind of leaning towards using the olive oil, because, as I mentioned, olive is naturally high in copper, but I also wanted to see how the copper ormus interacted with the grapeseed oil. And so I infused both kinds, olive oil and grapeseed oil. Hands down, the olive oil had a huge affinity for the copper versus the grapeseed. And the way that I knew that is that when I was infusing the olive oil with the copper ormus, the olive oil would turn this beautiful deep blue color. And it would retain that color. You know, even now I have infinity oil that I made weeks ago, and it's still this beautiful blue color. It's amazing. And the grapeseed oil would keep that blue color for maybe overnight and then slowly lose it. And so it was nice to know my intuitions were right, and, you know, and so I go with the olive oil because it obviously has such a nice affinity for that copper.
Crystal, have you done this disaggregation process with any other metals, and with what effect?
Right, and that's actually where I'm going to next. I haven't yet, but I do have in the planning stages other oils, ormus oils that I want to develop, and not only using different oils besides just the olive oil and the grapeseed oil. But also using different starting materials. I would like to make a gold ormus oil. I would like to make a silver ormus oil. And so it's a matter of, you know, is this process going to work the same way for those oils, or is there a better way to do it? What oils complement best those starting materials? I'm also thinking of using a starting source of ormus of a mineral source, the same type of mineral source you would use for like a live oil, and seeing what I get out of that. But, I feel like I'm in new territory. You know, everybody knows how to make the wet manna now, you know, but that doesn't work for the oils. And so I feel a little bit like a pioneer in researching and figuring out what works best for the oils. And so that's
so
where
you
I'm
told
going.
Me on the phone that
I'd like to interject something, if I may.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Essentially, her copper oil is nothing short of amazing. It has absolutely no metallic properties whatsoever. It's totally stable. Nothing is ever precipitated out of it. And you notice how you put a copper bracelet on to boost your copper in your body, and it turns your arm green? Well, I've had this oil all over me.
I wear it every day.
Day after day. Absolutely no discoloration of the skin whatsoever, but healing and rejuvenation of the cells. I have scars on me that have literally gone to half of what they were. But the important thing to emphasize to me is that there are absolutely no chemicals used, nothing but fire and salt and the pure metal. And that has absolutely none of the metallic properties of copper. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Crystal.
Yeah, and actually I'm really glad that he brought that up because, you know, to me automatically when I say copper ormus, I know that there's no metallic properties anymore of that copper ormus. I mean, it's copper ormus, not copper metal. But that's a good point that always needs to be made. Is that, you know, it's not copper metal anymore. I have taken copper metal in its mundane base form and transmuted it into its exalted ormus form, its spirit form, its light form, and it has none of the copper metal properties anymore, so you don't have to worry about toxicity. And I know a lot of people really enjoy the colloidal solutions, where it's copper or silver, nanoparticles, but that's still the metallic properties. You still got to worry about metal toxicity with those.
Yeah, and I wanted to add that once the copper is raised to its highest vibrational level, then it becomes picky and choosy. It absolutely insists upon symbiosis. It rejected outright the grapeseed oil. It would not have anything to do with it. However, symbiosis was achieved with the olive oil, where it would just keep soaking it up and soaking it up. Extremely happy. But again and again and again, I mean, for 9 days straight, we tested it. It would not work with the grapeseed oil. It insisted upon symbiosis in nature. And the fact that the olive oil naturally contains copper, that was the key to the copper. Now, working with the gold and silver, we have yet to ascertain what those keys are. So it can take a while to get it done, but we will get it done. But here,
have you noticed any spiritual effects with that? You hear about all these gurus over in India copper plating their navel and stuff.
I didn't even know about that, huh? Yeah. Well, you know, the spiritual effects that I have noticed, you know, all of it, and that's why I started with this, all of it builds up your light body and opens up your connection to source and makes strengthens that connection. And so that underlies all Ormus products, I believe. But with the Infinity Oil, with the copper, you know, by using it myself, I have, you know, I think of the Infinity Oil as an anti-aging, you know, miracle oil, but it's not just physical anti-aging. It's mental and emotional and spiritual anti-aging. You know, by the time I'm 35, and usually by the time you reach middle age, you're so ingrained in what society has to tell you and what the scientists have to tell you, and you can be so closed-minded, whereas, you know, children will tend to have more psychic phenomenon happen and have talk to ghosts or whatever. You know, they're so much more open to the possibilities, and they're not trained yet to say, no, that's impossible. You know, everything's possible when you're a child. And so I kind of feel like you get that energy where you just, you're open and there's a joy in life and there's an optimism and anything's possible. And that's kind of why I named it Infinity Oil. You know, there's infinite possibilities. That's how I felt. And like I said, the oil came to be named, so that wasn't my doing. That's what it wanted to be named.
You say that just like Don made mention of making an intention about your ormus,
mm-hmm.
that your ormus oil describes itself and behaves in the same way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely subscribe to Daddy's theory that Ormus is alive and conscious, and that everything I do, because I make my own wet method Ormus, and I help Daddy, you know, I'm still learning, but I'm helping Daddy with the live oil and the live burns and sodium burns. And so everything that I do, I work as my highest self. I put myself in that state. And, you know, and it's interesting, the more that I take the manna that we make, because I take our manna, the more I use the oils I make, the more I actually do the processes and work with the Ormus, the more I understand it, and the more that it kind of teaches me. You know, I feel like it teaches me. You know, Daddy was talking about earlier that new people starting out with the wet method, they're so, you know, and I was the same way my first time, so worried about getting that pH just right. And is this the plateau? Oh, wait, it went up a hundredth of a tenth. Maybe that's not the plateau. Is this, you know, where should I stop? But, you know, you just open yourself up to your highest self. And when I do my work, I call in my highest self source. I call in the nature intelligences and devas of the starting material. I even call in the elementals. And when they come in, that's fun because they love to make Ormus. They even get to have some while I'm making it. But you can feel their energies. They're so joyful and playful. And it's like, oh, boy, we get to make Ormus. But that's, you know, that's the place I'm in when I'm doing this. That's what I bring into it, what they help me to bring into it. And so, yeah, and, you know, and it just shows right there, you know, the Ormus oil has a mind that wanted the olive oil. That's what it worked best with.
You know, it kind of reminds me that this material is the teacher of righteousness. And as you work with it, you really do learn. It teaches you. It'll give you clues that you cannot ignore. The oils, you know, in the previous example were a perfect example of that. So the more you work with the material, the more it teaches you. And we obtain symbiosis with it as this process unfolds, and we approach the quintessence of our great work. It's a journey, and we're well on our way.
Right. Yeah, when you're starting out, you know, and you just have to get out of your own way, you know, allow the Ormus to do what it's meant to do. You know, when you're in the lab and you're making your manna, get out of your own way, and it's all going to come out perfectly. It's going to come out better than if you're sitting there worried, you know, did I get the pH exactly right? Because it's going to be perfectly right, exactly the way it should be. If you're
another thing that I've seen and I've commented on quite a few times is that when people take Ormus, and then especially if they make and take their own Ormus, every single time they make some Ormus and take it, their vibration or the level of consciousness or LIC reading, as I call it, jumps up.
Right, and then the next time they make even
And the
more.
Next time they make it, it's even more powerful.
Right, exactly.
And what it leads to, inevitably, is it becomes less and less of a dividing line between the person and their Ormus.
Right, perfectly.
And what I'm saying is that people become more Ormus-like and they start exhibiting the qualities of Ormus in their day-to-day life.
Right, and that's because they've built up their light body. And they've opened up that connection between spirit and the unmanifest, where Ormus comes, where everything comes. And so, yeah, as you're making it, you have the Ormus in your energy field. You're working with it. You're interacting with it. And then when you take it in the manna form or you're putting it on as an oil, you're again strengthening that connection. You know, David Hudson talks about how the Ormus achieve high spin state, and so you have a electron time forward, electron time back, and they get into a coherent wave resonance, and then the Ormus will peak in and out of 0 point. And 0 point energy is just another way for me, in my mind, another way to describe source or the unmanifest. And 0 point is that point of first manifestation. Well, that's where the Ormus is coming from, and that's where source is coming from, and that's our light body connection to source. Everything comes from there, just degrees of manifestation based on different energy frequencies.
The closer we come to creation, the more creation we become.
Right, yeah. And so,
nice.
Yeah.
You know, this is something I've been hammering on the Ormus forums for quite a while now, that people should be taking and making and taking their own Ormus.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And especially if for all of you guys who are listening and you aren't making and taking your own Ormus yet, one of the fastest ways that you will evolve as an Ormus maker and taker is to get Ormus from some of these heavy-duty characters who have sort of gone up the Ormus scale, you might say, and clearly Don is one of them, and that will assist you in jumping up your affinity to Ormus, so your own Ormus will become better.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
Soon, every batch that you make will be better for you than any other batch of anyone else that you can take, because it's so attuned to you.
Right. And one thing Daddy mentioned earlier is that we do everything with intention and consciousness and opening ourselves up to higher consciousness, but we don't imprint it with what it should do for that person, because it's that, you know, whoever ordered it, that is their Ormus. They know what they need from it, and so it's up to them when they take it, hold it under their tongue, and tell it what they need from it.
From the moment we write their name on the box, it begins imprinting and tuning to them.
Right, exactly.
And it follows suit all the way to them. And that comes back to what I told you before, earlier in our conversation, where people would email me the same day it arrived, not knowing that it was there. But it was communicating with them, even if it hadn't been placed into their mailbox or into their possession, through long-distance communication.
That's very cool.
Another example of this, which is poignant, some friends of mine and I were up in Atlanta. Barry Carter was there. And we all took some of my M3. Well, no less, not 1 minute had passed after we swallowed it, the phone rang. Well, someone several hundred miles away had just taken some of my M3 and decided to call. And she was in the same psychic wave or within the same resonance phenomena that the rest of us were tuned in, because she took the same material at the same time, quite as a coincidence, you might say, but she calls up. It is not only transdimensional, it absolutely crosses time-space. There's definitely a tuning and an alignment to the material. And it doesn't matter what form it's in. It can be in the mana form, it could be in the oil form, it can be in trap water. It's the same type of phenomena that's going to happen. I've seen it over and over and over, thousands of times over my years. This is something that I can no longer ignore. I mean, not my imagination, you know. Well, I just wanted to mention that. Okay, Crystal?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, over the last 10 years, I hadn't been making the mana or anything like that, but that's the time period that my father has really been into it, researching and stuff. So we had many conversations over the years. I watched David Hudson's Dallas lecture and Tampa lecture 10 years ago, you know, early on, and we had many conversations. And then also during this time, I've been taking his mana. So even though I hadn't been actively in it being an alchemist until recently, full-time, you know, that's always been there. And so, you know, I got to build up my levels. And so I think that, you know, a lot of people tell me how powerful they can feel, even the wet method manas I make, you know, that, you know, I've had the 10 years that I've been building up my LOC and getting it up there and communing with Ormus and all that.
And that brings us to another point, you know. So, we encourage people to make their own. In fact, you know, for years and years I've taught them, and so has Barry. But there are some people who are too busy. They have too much going on in their life to be able to take the time out to make it. So that's where we provide it to them. We're actually just providing a service. Okay? And plus, you know, as always, I give the M3 and whatnot away to sick people, so people that buy the material still help to support me to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, we do this full-time. This is our only source of income. And, you know, I don't have any kids. I'm not married. You know, it's just us doing our alchemy daughter, daddy-daughter thing. And so we have the time to devote to this, to really make, you know, superior ormus that other people maybe have spouses and children and full-time jobs, and, you know, they need to attend to that, won't have the time for. But, you know, they start taking it, and maybe they'll start making time for it.
Yeah, you know.
Excuse me, guys. It's Alan here. I'm going to come in.
Hi.
Just to reinforce what you guys have said.
Uh-huh.
There's a few people around who are making ormus, and they don't necessarily need to survive on it. I got an IT business. I'm making at this time, I'm not wanting an award for it. I'm the only guy doing the serious sort of work that you're doing in the UK, Don. You know that. I don't need to live in it, to live in what you're doing. And what happens, from my point of view, I'm watching it, is that sometimes people get kind of carried away with some kind of new idea and all the rest of it. And it lasts for a couple of weeks, couple of months, so what? You guys are not getting any money. Nobody wants to buy anything from you. And you don't want to say, well, come on then, how about buy some of my stuff? I don't think, Don, you've ever seen me post in my incarnation as a UK producer on the forums. I don't do it because I think it's a little below the belt to post on the forums if you're actually a manufacturer. I think if it's a discussion of ormus, you shouldn't be saying, buy it this weekend, you'll get it half price and stuff. Now, that's not
right.
Actually intended as a you know, criticism against anybody at all, but I think the two things should be kept separate. But, you know, you guys are doing all this work, and you're not making $1 million. But I said that many times. You're not making any dollars half the time. And I support this totally, what you guys are doing. You know, it's easy for me because I've got a small other reason why I'm alive. But all the people who are talking about it, and they say, these guys charge too much for their ormus, these guys too much for their mana. Yeah, as Barry has said recently on the forums, who's making $1 million? He doesn't see anybody, and he's absolutely right. Nobody's making it. It's high time people should have a look at this. I mean, for example, Don, you're on the forum, you're on this call tonight, and it's beautiful. I'm enjoying every minute of it. Don, which of us here is going to pay your phone bill? Right? It's maybe sometimes down to that, isn't it? I love you.
Well, you know
that.
Yeah, I learned to acquiesce a long time ago. And I don't have any desires to be a rich man. My desires are more esoteric than that, and I'm trying to get rid of all of them. But so far, especially in the past 5 years, things have worked out to where I've been able to sustain, but not able to make progress. Mostly just treading water slowly. But, you know, getting back to nuts and bolts. I don't advertise on the internet. I don't go on the forums trying to solicit sales. One disheartening thing that happened last year, I referred two people to the Ormus Forum and the Science Work Group. Well, on one forum, there was a war going on, and on the other forum, too many infomercials and sales pitches. And both people emailed me and said that they left the forum. One person said it was like going to a war zone, and the other said it was like going to a used car lot.
I was probably the used car salesman at the time.
That kind of stuff, when you refer people of a higher consciousness level, they see that kind of thing going on and get those perceptions. Well, it gives them a bad impression.
It gives Ormus a bad name. They're saying this is what they're getting from Ormus? It can't be all that, then.
Yeah, it's like, you know, You got to get rid of the hard sales. You got to get rid of the infomercials and actually try to provide some guidance and some actual facts instead of the BS that's on there so much. And so I mostly pretty much just have to stay disengaged. But, you know, that's just me. I'd rather spend my time trying to actually get some work done and some research done. And, you know, it's been just so fulfilling. I can name dozens of people who would not be alive today if it wasn't for the work that Barry and I have done. Is that important? I think so. So I'm going to give it back to Crystal, but that was all the commentary I needed to make.
Yeah, so that's pretty much everything I wanted to cover. Is there any other questions?
What kind of physical response did you get from your copper oil?
Okay. Well, it depends on the different oils. If they were all the same, I wouldn't need to make different
ones. Excuse me, could you repeat the question because I didn't hear it?
He was very low. It was really low for me, too.
What kind of physical response did you get from taking the copper oil?
Hello?
Yeah, actually, someone's asking a question. It's just really low. So I think what your question is, it is really low, but you're asking what are the different physical effects people get from our oils. Is that correct?
From your copper oil, yes.
Oh, from the copper oil, yeah. Well, copper is as I mentioned before, increases collagen and melanin production. So one should see over time a decrease in wrinkles or a decrease in scars or stretch marks for women who, you know, have babies and have stretch marks. You should see a decrease in that because what the copper does is that it increases, it breaks down that damaged collagen that, you know, that you have a wrinkle because the collagen has been damaged. It breaks that down, but then it also, because it increases collagen production, helps to build up new healthy collagen. So the wrinkles are filled in. You get firmer skin, more uplifted skin. You know, all the things that happen when we age, we have decreased melanin production, so we get gray hairs. We have decreased collagen production. So when the sun UV rays damage our skins, we can't replace that damage skin with new healthy collagen. You know, and older people have the saggy skin and it's decreased collagen production. All these things happen physically in our bodies as we age. And so the copper helps to increase that. You know, and this you can, you know, even like skincare companies like Neutrogena and stuff are starting to put in copper polypeptides into their products. Well, you know, that's great. You know, yes, copper does all this great stuff. It is one of the trace minerals that we need in our bodies. But I feel like the Infinity Ormus oil takes it a step further because it's not just copper metal. It is the copper ormus. And so it's the exalted, more spiritual form of this copper. And so you get all the physical effects, but you're also getting the increasing of the light body and the strengthening of the light body and better communication between the cells. So, you know, you have a cell at you know, this is kind of cartooning it or making it cartoonish, but let's say, you know, you have a cell at where your wrinkle is, and you're like, hey, I need some collagen over here, and you get better cellular communication to help build up that collagen. And so, you know, you get the physical benefits of actually, you know, appearing younger. Many people all the time, now, granted, I've only been using the copper ormus oil for a couple of weeks because that's how long it's existed, but many people tell me how I look 10 years younger than I am. I'm 35, and people always think I'm 25. But then, you know, and so you get those physical effects, but then on top of that, you get the spiritual effects of being more childlike, having, you know, feeling like there's more possibilities and being more optimistic. And that's where I think, you know, ormus takes, you know, yeah, we all, you know, need to supplement our magnesium or whatever, and we're getting that, or calcium, and we're getting that from the wet method manna or whatever. But we take it so much further because we have this metaphysical, conscious, live material in there, too. And so that's why I feel like the Ormus products are so much better than colloidal products, for example. You know, we're taking it that step further. And if the spirit body, the light body, really does drive the physical body, then this makes sense. you know, many people think, well, I'm not a human having a spiritual experience. I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. I just happen to incarnate into this body. And so, of course, my spirit, my light body is going to be in the driver's seat. It's going to be the most important thing. And that through strengthening my light body, I can then strengthen my physical body.
And that becomes more and more true the more and more your light body grows.
Right, exactly.
And you get to the point where your light body exceeds your physical body.
And then you can biolocate and
yeah.
do all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah, walk on water.
Uh-huh. Us and the water strider beetles.
Yeah, it wouldn't be because we have big feet, but I happen to, so I could. we still want to provide some support for him. So I guess rather than auctioning off some products, what I could say is, you know, it's, if someone wants to come send us an email and they wanted to buy a bottle of the Doves of Venus and a bottle of the Infinity Oil, we'll send it to you and send the proceeds to Barry so that he can do things like pay his electric bill and phone bill.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you. That's very nice.
Enormous than Barry.
That's right. Yeah, Barry deserves the support.
Yeah, and, definitely.
You know, he's been a premier researcher, an instigator. He's a great instigator. Barry, you're being accused of being an instigator, dude.
Cool.
How do you plead?
Cool.
The keeper of the library.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, we've been on the phone for hours now. Down here, it's probably 88 degrees inside of this place and very humid. I need to turn the window air conditioner on. And if we don't do that, I mean, if we do that, you won't be able to hear a word we say because it makes enough noise to hear from Florida into Kansas somewhere. So,
Well, I'll tell you what, let's just take a question or two and we'll wind this baby up.
That's
okay.
It.
Hi. Hi, it's a question for Dawn.
Okay.
Hi, can you hear me? Okay, my name's Jita. I'm calling from the UK. You mentioned that earlier in the lecture that low-level radiation drives life. What do you mean by that?
Low-level radiation is very often the energy packets that we receive from the aether.
Uh-huh.
It's that it's the energy that drives everything in physicality. You know, there. No matter what paradigm you observe or embrace, whether it's current atomic theory or Ledbetter and Besant, there's still energy having to drive all of that movement and matter. Lots of times, this is misconstrued as low-level radiation, or it's equivalent to low-level radiation.
Oh, it's equivalent. And do we all have, like, a set amount before, or do you have potentially an infinite amount?
Excuse me, jumping in here, because what's your name? Who's the caller, please?
Jita is her name.
No, what's your first name? What's your first name? I hear your accent, because I'm in Scotland.
Pardon?
What's your name?
Jita, J-I-T-A.
Okay. The point that is actually that the energy that's involved, the radiation energy that Don's trying to say, to do with this is not quite the same as we actually understand as radiation sickness or something like that. It's a completely different kind of energy.
It's a totally different form of energy. The energy is manifest in the orms and provides energy for the light body, okay? It's the energy that's directly driving the orms from the aether, okay? When an atom goes into a high spin state, there's energy driving that spin state. That's what I refer to as the low-level radiation that people talk about. Now, that being said, if I take the mana and try to force it back to metal, it gives off a tremendous amount of high-level radiation. And in an example, the EMF of that stainless steel pot that literally peeled itself apart, radiation.
The nasty stuff.
Yeah, that only happens when you mistreat this material and try to force it to do something against its nature. And the material really is conscious. Okay? When it's in that high state, it does not ever want to be metal again. You know, that's like someone becoming a Rhodes Scholar and then they're stripped of their robes and made to mop the floors in the local bar joint. You know, they do not want to go back to a fallen state. And this material is adamant about that.
So it's like a drive of evolution.
Yeah, that would be de-evolution. You know, to go back into the fallen state of being in the metal again.
So it's a good thing.
Any other questions?
Hey, I would like to make a little announcement.
Okay.
The winners of the raffle are Arlene, Eileen, and Robin in Australia.
Well, congratulations. Did someone email us with the shipping particulars? And we will send them something that will make the toes curl.
Aww, I never win anything.
That's my Virginia kind of being a boy again kind of thing.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering, what is the difference between Ormus in a high-spin state and Ormus with a very large auric field on it?
There's no difference.
Ah,
right. It's the high spin state. Well, Ormus, by definition, is in the high spin state. And so when it's in a high spin state, it's going to have the bigger auric field, the more energy that it's keeping it in that high spin state, the bigger the auric field.
So would that mean somebody new to Ormus? I have many different Ormus products, and some I can feel a really powerful field on, and some I can't. So if I was to introduce the product to somebody who's never taken Ormus, would I want to introduce them to a product with just a small field on it?
No. Actually, what you want to do is provide them with the best that you know of.
Mm.
Quite seriously. If they have, if they get overwhelmed by it, they can just take a smaller amount.
Mm.
But it's going to act quicker. I mean, it's different for every individual anyway. I mean, we're all part of the same source. So each person is going to react differently to it. But there's no reason to give someone a lower energy source and a higher energy source.
So then how do you differentiate your products? Because it seems to me many distributors or producers of Ormus have various levels of products. And it seems like you'll start off with one product, and after you've done it for a while, you can move up to another product. What's the difference between these products?
Well, some makers approach it that way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I won't comment on that. I'll tell you the reason why we make so many different products is specifically because each of the source materials has their own individual, unique resonance and balance.
Hmm.
The mana made from the Dead Sea is totally different than the mana made from the Great Salt Lake. They're even different colors. They're all white, but they have different sheens, different size auras. Some people just resonate with the Dead Sea. Some people just resonate with the Great Salt Lake or the C11. They all have a different energy signature and a different balance.
If you're deficient in vitamins, you may be deficient in a different group of vitamins than somebody else.
Exactly.
And these are just special nutrients that most people don't know about. So the mix of nutrients that you need is going to be different from the mix of nutrients that anybody else needs, and it's going to change over time.
Yeah, and I actually have an interesting story that relates to this. A few weeks ago, I went over to a friend's house, and she had a friend over, and they wanted to kind of sit with the different oils and manna that I have, and to try to see which ones they resonated with the best. And the one girl was, you know, she had the Great Salt Lake, and she's, you know, I'm really not feeling much with this. And but with the Dead Sea Gold, she, you know, they hadn't taken it, but they were kind of intuiting how, you know, what they needed and whatever. And but with the Dead Sea Gold, she really resonated with the Dead Sea Gold. Well, this is a woman who's in, she exercises all the time, she eat right, she meditates all the time, you know, she's in good physical health. Well, with the Great Salt Lake, you're getting more of rhodium and iridium and the broader range of ormus than you are with the Dead Sea Gold, where it's mainly gold with some rhodium and iridium. So it made sense that intuitively she gravitated towards the Dead Sea Gold versus the Great Salt Lake, because she listened to what herself was telling her what she needed, and she didn't need a lot of physical healing. So she gravitated more to the Dead Sea Gold.
Yes, so she just naturally selected one that helped with her meditations because she didn't need the rhodium and iridium for a healing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so the difference is that people feel in the different products could be based on what they need at that moment. And so one product may resonate with them more strongly than another. Well, that's the one that has what they need right now. And that may change a few months from now.
Exactly.
Well, listen, we're pretty much over time.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to thank you for having us, Dennis and Barry. And
thank you for being had.
Well, yeah. we love having you guys, and as you were the first time, Don, fascinating, deeply educational, and strongly contributing to my body of knowledge, and I thank you for that. And
well,
so that'll be so for everyone else, I'm pretty sure. And so,
well, any time in the future you want to do it, just give us a little bit of notice, okay? And we'll be happy to talk with you all.
And sure, maybe we'll have you as an annual fixture.
Crystal?
Yeah. Oh, Crystal? This wasn't nearly as scary as I thought it was going to be, so I'll do it again.
I told you it was going to be fun, Crystal.
You were wonderful.
Your skill as an educator has really showed up in this.
Oh, well,
you did
thank
very
you.
Good.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, talking on the telephone is not our first choice of doing things. You know, we both just prefer looking at people's faces and into their eyes, and it's a more direct exchange of energy, too. But we're getting used to this phone thing. I think, you know, we might be able to exist in the 21st century. we'll see what we can do about that.
Good. Fascinating. Well,
okay.
Guys.
Thanks much. We're gone.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, guys.
And listen, before you all sign off, just say who you are and just say goodbye so the whole group can hear you leaving.
Well, I'm Don. I love you all, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Go ahead, Don. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you, Crystal.
Bye. Thank you.